Hello, and welcome to KPPP-LPFM for another podcast. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp. I thank you for listening in. I'm here with Duke Gomez-Shemp.
Hello.
And we are broadcasting these podcasts online as we get ready to go on the air. And we're not on the air yet. We're on the internet.
Well, it's something we're working on right now. We're going to be doing internet radio, broadcasting from 365live.com. And we're going to have a player on the kpppfm.com website that you'll be able to listen to us live. And the programs that we actually record will have right below that live button. We'll be announcing our live broadcast coming up so you can actually tune in and listen.
Exactly. And we want to hear from our listeners. We want to hear your feedback, your comments, your questions, topic ideas. You can get a hold of us by leaving us a message at 701-566-0917. Or you can tweet us at @media_PPP. Or you can email us at Cindy@kpppfm.com or Duke@kpppfm.com. Whoa, that's a lot of peas.
Yeah.
So that's how folks can get a hold of us, and we really do appreciate the feedback. We just put out our first podcast yesterday, and I had a bunch of great feedback the next day immediately. So thank you for reaching out to us on social media, in emails and messages. You can also find the People's Press Project on Facebook, so you can follow updates to what's going on, and you can check out our website for the radio station at kpppfm.com. Today's topic, I'm going to be hitting this topic a lot. You're going to hear me talk about race and issues of racism in this country, because it's a very important topic right now in at this time in our history, and I mean, it always has been. But it's a very important topic right now for a lot of people. It's all over the news. We had this mass shooting in South Carolina, and we had a Confederate flag debacle. Everybody remembers Bree Newsom, the brave woman that climbed up that flagpole and pulled down that flag. It was an incredible day. And I think that it's going to be an iconic moment in history that we all remember the same way we remember the marches during the civil rights movement. So what I wanted to talk about today specifically with regard to this is the division in this country on this discussion of race. And there's very clearly a division in the experience that people of color are having and that white people are having. And it concerns me, not only for the people of color, because we experience what some people call post-traumatic slave syndrome or fatigue, racial fatigue, from having to explain to white folks that don't share our experience what we go through. And what's even more difficult is to have them not believe what our experiences are, because they've never had to think about those things in many cases. It's never even crossed their mind that our life experience is so different. But one of the things that that is coming up a lot in the discussion of the differences between how white people are perceiving these discussions about race in America right now is the effect that their ignorance about these issues is having on their lives. And this is what I wrote about. I actually wrote an open letter to white people on the eve of their wake-up call. And the reason I did this is twofold. One is because I really sincerely mean this. I really think that there's a lot of well-meaning white folks that really just don't have a clue as to when their opening their mouth and inserting their foot and saying something that's ignorant and maybe not even racist, just ignorant and selfish and insensitive. But to people who have endured so much, who've watched so much suffering, who have had to deal with so much racism and depression in their lives, especially at this crossroads of time in history where people are just inundated and fed up, these types of comments, as innocent as they may be by white folks, are going to be met with a lot of anger and a lot of frustration. And there have been even greater repercussions, including people losing their jobs, losing their reputation, and being ostracized. So the first reason is because I really sincerely believe that this is a warning for white folks who want to heed this message that will help you avoid a lot of problems. The second one is literally to give a wake-up call to white folks out there who don't believe that there's a problem of racism anymore in America. For whatever reason you believe that, maybe you think it's because we have a black president now and that proves that there's no more racism, or maybe you think that reverse racism is a problem now because black people or people of color actually have it better than white people. But that doesn't really matter. This letter is still relevant to you. Because even if you are one of those folks that thinks that all the stuff that people are talking about constantly with regards to race is just a bunch of race baiting, hyped up malarkey, this letter to white people can still help save you from embarrassment, from being ostracized, and from being looked at in history, looked back on in history with disgust for your behavior. Now, you may not realize that. And, you know, in the kindest terms I can say it, I'm just trying to keep folks, whether they believe racism is a problem or not, I want white folks to realize there is a price to be paid on their side too. And this letter is about that. So I'm going to start out the discussion by reading this letter. It's called An Open Letter to White People on the Eve of Their Wake-Up Call. I know that this may come as a shock to most of you, but times are a-changin'. Yes, I know that normally times change, but everything stays the same with white supremacy, so you normally don't have to move a muscle. But this time, things are different. It is becoming increasingly hazardous to be ignorant about race and racism in America. Up to this point, white Americans have been raised generation after generation on a steady diet of misinformation, lies, half-truths about the history and legacy of genocide, land theft, and slavery upon which this country was founded and run for centuries. None of that information, however, has been necessary for the happy and carefree functioning of the average white person. For the most part, white folks have been able to blissfully navigate their lives saying racist things like the N-word and then saying something ignorant like, that's not racist, that's just what people used to call them. My grandparents are from the South and they say it all the time. That doesn't make them racist. And then having no one correct them. In fact, no matter how ignorant, dismissive, or inflammatory the racist drivel that comes out of white people is, up until now, they have gleefully been able to say whatever their wagging tongues entice them to without giving a second thought to any of it or the consequences. And up until now, white folks have had little to no consequences for their wrongdoings. But that is also changing. In fact, this lack of punishment, backlash, feedback has done two very harmful things to white people. One, it's made white folks unaware that what they're doing or saying is wrong because no one bothers to tell them. And two, it's made white folks think that they're invincible and they can't possibly have any consequences for the racist things that they say or do. And that's why this open letter is so important. I'm here as an ally to save white people some grief shame, and possibly even the loss of your job, your reputation, or your freedom. And although I'm not a white person, I can tell you that I am married to a white man. So, you know, wink, wink. So you may be asking yourself why I, a woman of color, would care to warn white folks. Well, the answer is simple. I care about white folks. I'm married to one. I'm surrounded by a society filled with white folks. And also, unlike white people, the majority of whom, 75%, don't have a single person of color in their lives, I have to interact and intimately know the lives of whites. So as someone who knows and interacts with white folks all the time, I'm on the front lines of what occurs to them when they falter or fail. I get to see up close and personal the humiliation, anger, pain, and frustration that they experience when life deals them a no card and they've never heard the word before. And let me tell you, it is not pretty. From what I can tell about white folks' reaction to being outed as racists, for examples, see Paula Deen, Don Sterling, and some of the Baltimore cops being indicted, just to name a few. These folks don't take it well. They seem genuinely shocked that there are consequences to their actions and that they, as white people, don't have the final say on what is racist. No amount of GoFundMe campaigns with white supremacist support will erase the place that these folks are garnering for themselves in the annals of history as racists. Sadly, most white folks are still so oblivious to the race problem in America that a vast majority deny their white privilege. Most don't know their country's history, and almost all white people will deny that they have racial bias, even though facts, science, and history have all shown most white folks and most people of color have racial bias against people who aren't Caucasian. If you're in doubt about that, look up the Department of Justice reports on racism in policing and in the justice system. Look up housing discrimination and redlining. Look up voter suppression and voter ID laws. Look up implicit bias and white fragility. But before you go and do all that research, let me tell you about the ways in which your ignorance will no longer be bliss. Getting unfriended. Now, this is by no means one of the major penalties which you will be punished with by doing or saying something racist to a person of color, but it will be one of the most common signals of things to come. You may have noticed that social media has become a war zone when it comes to conversations on race with people firmly entrenched in one camp or another. However, for people of color, we've been trained to get used to having white folks tell us how to identify yourselves. Don't call yourself a Mexican, call yourself a Mexican-American. Or how to feel about racism. Don't make it all about race. This is about money or power. Or how to talk about issues affecting people of color. You're going to hurt your own cause being so angry. Or when or where we can talk. On social media, what this means is that white people feel entitled to enter conversations about race or racism and educate people of color on what is or isn't discrimination. They consider themselves the gatekeepers of conversation, and they feel it's perfectly normal for them to censor, silence, derail, minimize, or insult people of color, knowingly or unknowingly, without any repercussions. White folks count on the submission of people of color and that they can frighten us by threatening loss of friendship that we really never had to begin with. In the past, most people of color would simply self-censor themselves to avoid confrontations. Today, however, people of color are tired. No, let me rephrase that. We are exhausted. We need to regroup, process, and comfort each other from the constant barrage of grief that we are being subjected to. Here's what you can expect to experience. One, butt out. You're going to be told as a white person that your input is unwanted. This will sting, as you are used to being able to express your thoughts on every matter, whether or not you know a lick about it. But remind yourself that if you can manage to follow the advice I'm giving you and shut your trap, you might actually learn something and not sound like a racist. 2, stop derailing. If a person of color is talking about the effects of white privilege in a society and its impact on people of color, you should not come into the conversation to pose a devil's advocate type question like, "Are you sure this is about race?" That will immediately make all the people of color want to defriend you. We are tired of hearing this nonsense. To your lily white brain, the question may seem like an epiphany, but try to remember that to a person of color, you are the millionth white person asking this stupid question, and the answer is still no. 3, your input on how people of color should feel or think about racism isn't wanted, and your suggested ideas have no value. Yes, I said it. When it comes to the lived experience of people of color, your perspective as a white person isn't the same as the perspective of a person of color about their own life or experiences. You are not a person of color, and you never will be. It doesn't matter if you had sex with a person of color, or if you have a biracial child, or if your best friend is black, or if you went on a mission trip to Haiti and have pictures of yourself hugging black children as your cover photo on Facebook. You are still white. Telling people of color you understand discrimination because you know a person of color is racist. As a white person, you have to accept that you don't know and can never know what it is like to be a person of color. I know this is difficult for you because no matter how ignorant you are about a topic, as a white person, you're allowed to comment without any ramifications. But try to remember that if you piss off all the people of color in your timeline who are black or brown, you won't have any more people to tokenize when you say, "But my friend is black." And then where will you be? And even if you go all Rachel Dolezal on us, people of color aren't going to accept your opinion as being equal to their own. Try to remember that the best policy to avoid being unfriended is to stay in your own lane and let the people of color express their own thoughts and feelings. Being unfriended may not feel like the end of the world, especially after you triage your wounds by having your white friends tell you how crazy it is that anyone would label you as a racist. But social media is a powerful tool. Your racist comments are on public display for people to screenshot, share, and repost all over the internet, which brings me to my second point: internet shaming. One of the ways in which people of color are fighting back is that we are sharing the racist actions, comments, or words of white people in the form of videos, screenshots, memes, and more. And it doesn't even matter to us whether or not the mainstream media is ignoring these people of color stories. We still make them go viral on the internet and social media. People of color are putting the cart before the news horse and forcing media outlets to follow stories that people of color are making popular. Sure, they can put a white frame around it and call black and brown folks thugs and criminals. But by the time that story even came out of Bill O'Reilly's mouth, people of color already had a heyday with it on Tumblr and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook. What the mainstream is doing these days is Monday morning quarterbacking for white folks' sake. In the meantime, what's going on is this: your racism is being recorded for all posterity. Think about that. Sure, it may seem innocuous to you now to get into a flaming war on Facebook telling black folks that if protesters didn't act like such thugs and animals, the police wouldn't have to beat them. Or maybe it seems like a good idea to you to post a comment of support with your donation on a GoFundMe account for one of the cops that have slain an unarmed black child. But you should remember how we look back with disgust at the people, the white people in those images from the 60s about our history of racism and slavery. Remember the indelible pictures and the ugly white women screaming at the black kids trying to go to school in Little Rock? Or how about the pictures of police using water guns or attack dogs on black children and people protesting? Perhaps you can remember the hundreds of photos of lynchings that were circulated throughout America as postcards, where people smiled and pointed at dead bodies in the frame. Your racist tweets, the screenshotted conversation of your racist rant, the racist joke you sent around the office in an email, those comments at the end of the news story about the Mexican people that you said should all go back to where they came from, those are the new lynch postcards. Your ancestors may have enjoyed the thrill of rushing to a lynching and participating in the melee, but you, on the other hand, are spared having to leave the comfort of your own home, where once white folks took souvenir body parts and snapped pictures of the dead. Today whites can assassinate the character of the already dead online. White folks can be part of the post-mortem with all the others who join in the chorus and consume the looped images of dead black and brown bodies in the media. And in the future, your racist posts will be viewed and remembered in history the same shameful way as those old lynching photos were, except that now your name will be directly attached to your actions forever. But before you kick the karmic can of your racism into the future, you have to know about the third danger that's facing white folks right now in the present: doxing and getting white people fired. There are now some consequences for white people acting in a racially discriminatory way that go way beyond public shaming. It's called doxing, and it's getting white people fired. There are now a number of blogs and websites like Racists Getting Fired on Tumblr, which are devoted to identifying and exposing racist white folks on the internet and complaining about said racist white folks to their employers and others. Doxing has also been used to expose criminal activities to the authorities. What seems like a very isolated possibility to most white people, the idea that they could lose their jobs because of something racist that they did or said online or outside of work, is becoming a very common phenomenon these days. Hacktivist groups like the world-famous Anonymous have used doxing as a way to call other hacktivists and the greater internet community to come together to find out the identity of someone they believe has committed an offense for which they should be outed. During the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, Anonymous offered a cash reward for information leading to the identity of the plain-clothed white man in the McKinney Pool incident, who was helping police hold down black children. Hacktivists were then called to use their resources to expose the identity of that man and any personal information about him. Anonymous has also targeted websites and taken them over, made them crash, shut them down, or like they did in at least one instance, flooded them with pornography. After an individual is identified and the facts about their lives begin to surface, their age, address, phone number, group affiliations, past and present employment, their blog pages, social media accounts, etc., the entire internet is then invited to use that information to hold the racists accountable. The way in which the internet has punished these racist white folks with the information gained during the doxing are varied. Some people will flood their social media accounts and blog pages or websites with negative comments, or bum rush them with so much traffic that they make their pages crash. Many people will create hashtags to mock racist white people, like the hashtag SeanTooney911, poking fun at McKinney resident Sean Toon, who called 911 on black kids at the pool party, or the hashtag AskRachel and hashtag Wrongskin making fun of the toutan Rachel Dolezal after her story broke on the internet. Social media will react with humor, albeit at the expense of the white person being roasted. To many of the tragedies that befall white folks who are exposed as racist. But the most damaging effects that doxing can have for white people is losing their jobs. Doxing has led most white people who want to expose racists to do so by calling, emailing, and boycotting businesses that employ them, and thereby pressuring businesses to take a position on the actions of their employees. People are getting fired, and it isn't just Paula Deen. Teachers, clergy, politicians, police, and the folks with average jobs as checkout clerks in Walmart, they are too. They're all getting fired from their jobs after internet hordes find out about what they said and expose their racism. The most recent case to make the national news was the white Bank of America employee identified in the McKinney video as starting the pool party incident in Texas. She has now hired famous attorney Gloria Allred to defend her from what she claims were racially motivated attacks against her white fanny. But no matter how loudly she cries reverse racism in court, she will always be that famous racist white lady from the McKinney pool party incident. The practice of doxing may seem unfair or even unethical and cruel to white people, but regardless of the assessment that you may have, doxing is here to stay. So you might as well prepare yourselves. Much of your personal and private information is so readily available online through a myriad of ways that it's nearly impossible for anyone to remain anonymous these days for too long. And just because you live in a gated community, it doesn't mean that you'll be able to escape the scrutiny or the stigma that will follow you around forever. Just look at George Zimmerman if you'd like to get a glimpse of what it looks like to be someone so steeped in the twin evils of privilege and denial as to end up becoming something between a public nuisance and your own worst enemy. Here are my final thoughts. Look, I'm not here to explain or prove to white folks what racism is or where it lives. I'm simply here to let white folks know that I care about them, and I don't want to see a majority of them, many of whom are my friends, get up ending hurt, embarrassed, called racists, or fired from their jobs. Besides, even if I tried to point out the racialized reality of our country, most white Americans would simply tune me out. So instead, I'm simply using this opportunity to warn those who wish to take heed how to keep themselves out of harm's way. Following the advice from my above three warnings for whites is important, but there is one more that may be the most important. It comes from the Bible in Proverbs, and it says, "Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent." In other words, white folks should take a seat and listen to people of color. Perhaps at least waiting to see which way the wind is blowing before popping off with insight on people of color would help you. Then when it becomes crystal clear to you that it's no longer PC to do something like use the N-word, for example, you will finally stop all on your own and even get to tell everyone that you always hated the N-word. And no one will be the wiser. Because let's face it, you won't be doing any of the suggested things that I have laid out here out of the goodness of your heart. It isn't as if it never dawned on white people that treating people of color badly was wrong. They had a civil war and ended slavery because they figured that stuff out. And if they forgot about that, they also had the civil rights movement that followed Jim Crow to remind them. What white America has isn't like amnesia, it's more like affluenza. And what it means is that even if you don't personally believe in racism, you can still be perpetrating it on others and acting like a self-aggrandizing racist jerk in the process, all while being blissfully unaware. Just keep that in mind. In the end, This advice may not save you from having someday answer this question. Where were you when Baltimore and Ferguson were burning? Or from answering for your mortal soul to your Creator on the question of where were you when your brother was being slain? Or to confronting your own conscience on the question of, is racism a problem in America? But it will keep you from facing any immediate repercussions, like having an uncomfortable conversation with Black people or feeling embarrassed. And it could also potentially save your melanin deficient hides from more serious consequences, like getting fired or going to jail. And in the interest of your own white privilege, isn't covering your own butt really what counts the most? And that is it. That is my letter, my open letter to white people. What did you think, Duke?
I think it's an excellent letter. I'm just staying in my own lane over here, you know. I think that the, you know, what you said about white people listening, is it takes a lot of listening. It takes a lot of effort to really listen and do my own research and really to keep my mouth shut. I mean, it's really, I think about many white people who just say things that I'm thinking, I can't believe they just said that, but it's they're wandering outside themselves and really not thinking about the person of color, how they're affected by what they do. And that's one of the bases of supremacy, is you don't think about people of color. So it's something that really needs to be undone. It's something that's going to take a lot of work. And I really like how your letter lays it out. It gives a lot of information, a lot of things to think about, and really some methods on how to undo your own racism as a white person.
I think that it sets people free from the idea that they have to agree with racism being real or not, in my definition of it, you know, because obviously not everyone that I cross paths with agrees with what I think, or, you know, how, you know, what the academic definition of racism, which is power plus privilege. So in our society, in order to be able to exert racism, people can discriminate. I can
have bias and prejudice. Yes.
Right. We all do that. Everyone does. People of color do too. But we have never historically, and do not in this present moment as people of color, have power and privilege in this society.
That's right. Of the systems at all.
Right. The systems are dominated by white and male, predominantly.
And that definition of racism is an academic definition of racism that's actually been talked about for the past 20 years. It doesn't appear in the Webster Dictionary as that definition, but that's the working definition of racism in society in the United States.
And this is an academic discussion that people study when they're doing anti-racism work at the university level. People talking about and studying white fragility, anti-Black bias, you know, the intersectionality of privilege, race, sex, gender, etc.
Yeah.
And a lot of folks don't take those courses, I'm assuming, in America. It's not required.
No, but they're available on the internet now. We have the opportunity now of where we have all sorts of resources that we can do this research. We don't have to go to the library and pull out a Dewey Decimal System card to go look for some book. We have it at our fingertips. It takes some effort. It takes some commitment and some willingness to change the way we are.
Well, I have to tell you, as a person of color, I had a limited understanding of all of the jargon, the words, the white fragility, anti-Black bias, white privilege, all of those. Those terms were, you know, those academic terms. I knew what I was experienced as a person of color. I experienced racism. I experienced oppression. I experienced people's white fragility, but it didn't have a phrase for it. I didn't have a word for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I began to hear those things, oddly enough, from white folks doing anti-racism work, like yourself.
Yes.
That's the first people I ever heard it from, was people like yourself.
Well, the people who have really promoted and worked on the anti-racism movement have been people of color. And what they've had is that if they've had white allies willing to come and work with them to pretty much work with the white people, because as a white person, the worldview is so different, and we as trainers need to take white people on a path to get them to be able to recognize things, and people of color recognize things right away. Like you said, you know what it is, but you didn't have words for it. You didn't have the academia for it, but it's about your experience.
Right. And so I can understand if I, as a person of color, had not ever heard these terms, even though I know what they are by experience. People who don't know what any of these things are by experience, white folks, I'm sure think that these are, you know, like made up terms, and like people decided that you can't say black anymore and they want you to say African American, or you can't say Indian anymore. You have to say Native American. And it's not the same thing.
No, it's not. It's about the access to power and the balance of power, and about basically the oppression of the systems, the systemic racism that exists in the society that we perpetuate as people of color and white people. And to dismantle it or undo it, we really need to recognize those systems of oppression and really take the lead from people of color.
Right. I saw this hilarious Twitter rant. I cannot remember. I believe it was Black Danger Girl, but I could be wrong. That was hilarious to me because it talked about how white people sound when they deny our experience. And one of them was like, I don't believe that having cancer sucks, but going through chemo isn't so bad. Have I ever been through chemo? No. So, and there was a bunch of other tweets like that, where a woman said, or a man said, or a person said, you know, having a cesarean section isn't painful. It, you know, and then have I ever had one? No, not, of course not, you know, but white people, you know, those sound ridiculous, that you would feel that you have the right to give an opinion about something you have absolutely no knowledge of, no experience of.
Well, statistically, people of color are treated like they can handle more pain at hospitals and through surgeries and through different procedures, as there is this assumption that a person of color can actually take it. And I think that feeds into, it doesn't hurt. Like, how would I know if I've never experienced it? So I've never experienced what it is like to be a person of color. How can I actually feel that? So I'll make a judgment based on being white.
Wow. I had not thought about that. I don't doubt that there's an aspect of that to it. But I also think that there's another, you know, a deeper, real sense of how do you describe something you've never heard of or have absolutely no awareness of. And I think that there is a complete lack of awareness for most white folks about what our experience is like, because I have to say, you as a white man knew all about all of this terminology and anti-white, anti-racism, and you trained people.
Well, what we tend to do as white people, we tend to learn things and take things academically and consider them in our education, but we also need to take the time to actually change our behaviors and our interactions with the world. And I had a lot of academic study of racism, of all sorts of methods and trainings, and work with people to get them to to realize where they're at as a white person or a person of color, and how we can work together as a community to undo it and dismantle it. And the things I noticed over the years is that a lot of the white people, because we always did workshops, they had to be at least half people of color, half white people. Couldn't be all white people. Couldn't be all people of color because of the interactions. And I noticed people would leave, and they were very, very inspired, and we'd start some sort of support groups for each other, but people dwindled off and they went back to their same old behaviors because they didn't have avenues. They did not create avenues in their own lives to practice, to actually immerse themselves into their new realization about what racism is and how they play a role in it. And as you said in your article, that 75% of white people don't have a, you know, a friend, much less a personal friend, that's a person of color. How do we actually put that into practice?
Well, I don't think that had it not been for the fact that we got married and that we live on a daily basis in such close proximity to each other, that you would have had the understanding of what I go through as a person of color in reality, not academically, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
Because it was one thing for you to think about and hear about, oh, yes, people of color suffer microaggressions on the daily basis, and that must be very taxing. It's another thing to live with that person and the kids around you and the family members around you that are being oppressed by those microaggressions and macroaggressions mm-hmm. on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Because then you can feel the impact, maybe on a secondary level, but you can actually see the impact.
Yeah.
On other people.
It helps redefine me. And I have to be willing to really accept that I really don't know anything. I need to be humble. I need to really listen, take things in, and really suspend my judgment.
It's kind of like the difference, and I'm going to use a really harsh example, because racism kills, right? White supremacy kills.
Mm-hmm.
It is a system. It's a hierarchy of violence.
It's an attack.
Right. It has been enslaving, killing, raping, torturing people of color for centuries. Racism. So I'm going to use a harsh example, but it's kind of like the difference between thinking about what it would look like to shoot a gun and imagining it and learning all what the parts of the gun are and what it does and what it's like to shoot at an animal or at a person, but never actually picking a gun up and doing that. And then having a conversation with a person that does that every day, that sees people die every day or animals die every day, that has to shoot that gun every day and act like you and they both understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you read about it and you can describe all of it and you know all of the jargon. The experience of it, the emotional weight of it, the pain of it are very different when you know something academically than when you live the experience.
Yes, yes.
So that's, you know, that's what's missing from most white people's lives. And living in a segregated society where 75% of white people don't even have a single white person that they regularly have in their lives, that they have that close of a experience. And I'm not talking the dude you work with. Unless you guys hang out after work several times a week and you take care of their kids sometimes, or you go on double dates, or you baptize their children, mm-hmm. or you have them over to the barbecue every weekend, or mm-hmm. you guys take each other out to camping,
or take them to the lake. Or, yeah, bring the friends to the lake.
Unless you're living that kind of a friendship, like you do with your other white friends, then you don't have anything but an acquaintanceship.
That's right.
That's not a relationship.
It's a starting point, and
but it's not a friendship.
No, it's not.
And white people think that because there's a dude at work that's friendly with them, they have a friendship, and it's not a friendship.
Yeah, many times we'll use a person of color in our lives as a kind of a qualifier. Well, I have a Mexican friend, and they're really good at fixing cars, you know. So as I one of my neighbors, you know, I see him every once in a while and say hi.
Right, but see, our understanding of friendship then is very different than yours is.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much.
And I think that that's a disingenuous thing for white people to tell themselves that because they know, you know, Maria and Jose over there, and they wave at them every time they go pick up their mail because they're across the street, that somehow you have the same kind of relationships as the other neighbors who you actually have potlucks with.
That's right.
Who you actually go out golfing with, mm-hmm. who you actually have their kids come over to your house and you go over theirs. And maybe you tell yourself it's because, well, it's because you don't like their politics. Or maybe it's because you tell yourself because it's because you don't like, but you know what? White people have been coming up with excuses to not call their racism racism since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it's still racism.
Yeah.
It's not going to go away. You know, the other thing is that I have learned the hard way, the very hard, painful way, that the truth is that most white people simply want to avoid the conversation, the idea, their understanding of what the term means and what it will do to people if they're called racist, what it does to their reputation is so horrible, so terrible that they don't want to hear it said, period.
Mm-hmm.
If you say it at all, we're not friends anymore. And that's terrifying because everyone has racial bias. White people can exert racism with that racial bias. So all people have it.
Yeah. All people.
Whether it's implicit or explicit, it's still there. You can test for it now. So it's there, but white people don't want to acknowledge it's there.
No, and that's a key. I use the terms dismantling racism and undoing racism. Both those terms have an action part of it. You know, to undo, you need to really change your behaviors. And to dismantle, you really have to analyze it and really see where everything comes from and take that knowledge and actually change your behavior.
But I think the first step, in my experience in dealing with white people, is that white people have to stop thinking of the idea of racism as being a death sentence or being, you know, like a leper. You know who the lepers are in society? The people of color that are disenfranchised to the point that 1 in 3 black men can expect to be in prison, that 1 in 7 black children have a parent that's in prison, while only 1 out of 100 and some white children have a parent in prison. The people that we have pushed to the margins of society in many black communities, you know, while a white unemployment rate is hovering somewhere between 4 and 10% or whatever, in black communities, in some black communities, it's 80%, 50%. You know, those are the people that are really the social lepers. You being told that you're doing something that has gone out of vogue and should have gone out a long time ago is not racism. It's you feeling uncomfortable. That is not the same as either reverse racism or you being attacked. They're not. You're not marginalized. Your life isn't being destroyed because someone told you that you did something that's racist. And rather than have such a defensive and angry and upset attitude, a real good way to start to heal in this country would be for white people to go, really? Oh my goodness. How do I not do that anymore? I mean, would that would be revolutionary. It would be so refreshing.
It would be.
To be able to say to someone, you know, that's one of the things that I love about you that I can tell you, like, you know, this is really not cool.
No.
And I don't like it. And you'll go, oh my goodness. Well, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Because the relationship that we have, the love that we have as human beings, if someone tells you, hey, you're stepping on my toes, your reaction should be, well, I don't weigh that much, do I? Your reaction should be, oh, my goodness, let me get off your toes. I don't mean to step on your toes.
Exactly.
So let's start there. Let's start by white folks not being so defensive. It's not the end of the world. Don't think of racism as a personal choice. You don't have a choice at participating in a racist society that's policies, institutions all force you to participate in racism as a white person and to not even know you're benefiting from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, without getting into too many details of what all of those things entail,
we can take them up another time.
There's plenty of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first step is to stop seeing racism as an individual choice. It's a system. You're part of it. You didn't choose that, but you can choose not to be feeding it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to start to dismantle it. You know, racism is like a tide. It pulls in and it comes out. It goes in and it goes out. If you're just going to allow yourself to be dragged along with it, then you're a participant. You have to fight against it at all times to not be actively participating. This isn't the time anymore for people to keep their eyes closed, to keep the blinders on and pretend that it doesn't pertain to them because issues of race have to do with people of color. And you don't have to talk about that. You do. Whites especially have to talk about it. And the second thing that white people have to do is stop being terrified about the conversation's tone, the way in which the conversation is had. There's a lot of white folks out there that actually want to start having a conversation about race. But they know that, you know, it's a really hard topic for white people to talk about. So you got to tiptoe around it. You got to walk on eggshells. You got to use the right words. Maybe you only go as far as saying something about white privilege one day and tell them to look it up on Google and then you leave because it's too much. Well, I'm going to tell you that doesn't work. That doesn't work. We don't have time to tiptoe around this subject because people are dying. Every day, people are dying. We have to, especially white folks, have to care about this more than they care about hurting grandpa's feelings or mom's feelings or your dad's feelings. We have to care about loving each other as human beings more than we care about making someone feel uncomfortable because the Confederate flag symbolizes slavery and hate and lynching. Even if they're a good old boy and all that they think it means is heritage. It's time for us, time for white folks, to get into those uncomfortable conversations. Online, at home, with their friends. Don't hold back. Don't bite your tongue. Don't worry about whether or not the other person is going to flip out because you told them what they're doing is racist. Stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
Confront the situation. Because the first thing that white people are going to have a problem with is the fact that you're talking to them about it at all.
Yeah.
So they're going to have all sorts of negative reactions. They're going to be upset that you didn't use the right tone. They're going to get upset if you were too passionate. They're going to get upset because they feel like you don't trust them and they're the good white people.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a good white person and still be oblivious about how racist you are.
Yeah, definitely.
Just like you can be a man and you can be oblivious about your own male privilege and misogyny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just like you could be a straight person and be oblivious about your homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And still be a real nice person otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
But still be a homophobic.
Yeah.
Or a sexist. Or ableist. Or ageist. We all have a blind spot to the things that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
That can make us seem and act insensitive to others. And when it comes to the lived experiences of people of color, the cruelty and indifference continues to lead to our deaths. So I started off with the letter to white people asking white folks to consider the consequences, even those that don't agree with me. But for those of you out there that sincerely want to do and change something in our society, I urge you, it's your time. Because white folks listen to other white folks more than they listen to people of color. They feel more hurt when they hear it coming from me. And it's your duty to care for other human beings and care for the plight of Black people and the plight of Mexicans, the plight of people of color in this country that are being killed by police, murdered in jails, abused by immigration detention centers. It's your time to get into the middle of that conversation. So I ask you guys to think about that. Once again, you've been listening to KPPP LPFM. We will be coming to you on air in the future. But for now, you can follow our podcasts online at kpppfm.com. You can also contact us, leave us your comments, your questions, your topic ideas at 701-566-0917. Or you can tweet us at @media_PPP or email us at Cindy@kpppfm.com or Duke@kpppfm.com.
We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you.